We hear so much, don't we, about retailers struggling to survive. So what's behind this company's success? We asked our reporter, Declan Harvey, to find out.
Your attention, please. Although we call it Primark, you are about to hear people referring to it as Primark. And we know from experience, some listeners find that excruciating. Sorry about that. Primark is a retail phenomenon. Its first store opened in Dublin at the end of the swinging 60s. As the Beatles topped the charts, its founder, a Mr. Arthur Ryan, couldn't have imagined that someday loyal customers would spend £7.5 billion a year across its 360 stores. These stores are dotted across Europe, down the east coast of the US, and shortly in Slovenia. But we begin much closer to home. What's your name?
Bernadette, but you can call me Bernie.
Thanks very much, Bernie.
No
and your name?
Alicia.
Alicia, and you're both studying in Belfast?
Yeah.
You're both wearing Primark jumpers?
Yes.
She's wearing your jumper now?
Yeah, she is.
And she's wearing my jumper, and they're both from Primark.
Right, why are you not wearing your own jumpers?
Because we wanted to switch it up. And we're just out of Primark, as a matter of fact, honestly.
Give us a look in your bag. What did you buy?
I got earrings, nail glue, and eyelash glue.
It's my favourite shop ever.
Why is it your favourite shop ever?
Just because it's cheap.
It's not like it's a better quality, but it has nice. It's good stead on. Yeah. My mum would go to Primark a lot, so I'd probably just go there because she would have took me there when I was younger.
You shop in the same shop to buy clothes as your mum. I mean, a generation ago, that would have been seen as weird.
Well, my mum's quite stylish, so I don't know.
I didn't mean to suggest otherwise.
No,
I just thought, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I know
you know.
What you mean. But Primark is quite good at having clothes for older women and younger women and teenagers and stuff like that.
A lot of retailers' target markets are dictated by age, whereas I think Primark has a very broad customer base, and I think it's one of the only retailers to successfully do that.
Rebecca Weller-Davies is from the Retail Week industry magazine.
Back in November it was, Primark sales did slow down. Mercifully for them, it was just for that month, but it really panicked the market because it sees Primark as a bellwether of how the consumer is behaving.
Despite being responsible for a classic TV jingle, modern-day Primark says it drives down costs by no longer spending money on adverts. Instead, it relies on word of mouth. It's also somewhat unique in that it doesn't sell online. Customers have to get up and come in store. Retail analyst Jeroen Kruijenbrink has written for Forbes on this topic and says it's an approach that speaks to something within the shopper.
But first to what's been described as an abhorrent action, which one patient perpetrated on another in hospital. Declan Harvey has more on this. Declan, what happened?
Well, let me take you back to March 2016, Seamus, and 33-year-old Natasha Mulholland, who suffered from the genetic disorder Rett's syndrome, was admitted to Antrim Area Hospital. And after a couple of days, she was moved to a mixed-gender ward. And she was put in a bed next to 56-year-old Ronnie Carlson from Cullibaki in Ballymena. Late on a Saturday night, around 5 to 1 in the morning, in the dark of night, as the judge described it today, Ronnie Carlson left his bed and went to Natasha's bed and sexually assaulted her. It was, as we say, a mixed gender ward, and we'll talk about those concerns in just a moment. But a nurse happened to walk in and catch Ronnie Carlton in the act. He said at the time, "I thought she was okay with it," referring to Natasha. Now, what's important to understand about Natasha is the extent to which her profound learning difficulties impacted on her ability to fight back. She couldn't move. She couldn't speak. She was defenseless, the judge said. 9 months later, Natasha Mulholland died. She had always limited life expectancy, but her mum described the last 9 months of her life as painful. We'll talk more about the issues surrounding this at Antrim Area Hospital and the Northern Health Trust, but first, we've sat down with Donna Mulholland, that's Natasha's mother, to speak about the pain which has been caused to her family. And I began by asking Donna to describe her daughter, Natasha.
She loved watching DVDs of Winnie the Pooh. A lot of people would have thought she didn't understand, but she did. She understood everything that was going on. her mental age would have been a very young 14-year-old. We all knew the things she liked. She loved Charlie Pride. Kissing Angel Goodmorning was her favourite.
Whenever I chance to meet some old friends on the street, they wonder how does a man get to be this way.
I would have sang a lot around the house. Everybody else says I haven't got a note in my head, but Tasha loved it. And the worse singing you were, the better she loved it. Because I think she thought you're making an idiot out of yourself. Just lovely nature, always smiling.
You've got to kiss an angel good morning and let her know you think about her when you're gone.
Gloucester local councillor has been jailed for 4 months for sexually assaulting a 17-year-old girl. 73-year-old Brian Duffin of Cargin Road in Tonbridge denied the charges and has been bailed pending an appeal against the conviction. But despite being found guilty and being placed on the sex offenders register, he's insisted he'll not step down from the Antrim and Newton Abbey Borough Council. Our reporter Declan Harvey has been following this story for us. Declan is with us in the studio. What can you tell us about this assault, Declan?
Well, his victim was 17 at the time, back in June 2016. She'd been upset about an ill relative, and while appearing to comfort her, Brian Duffin suddenly asked her for a kiss, then kissed her, groped her, and the victim told the court that he stuck his tongue down my throat, I froze, I panicked. Brian Duffin admitted kissing the girl but denied it was sexual assault. Now, in court, the judge said it was a very serious matter, and he said the differential in age, she was 17, he was 71 at the time. He said that was a contributing factor to how serious it was. He said it had been a traumatic experience for the victim. Mr. Duffin's legal team did produce four character references for the judge to consider. One was from his parish priest, a Father McWilliams, who spoke to Mr. Duffin's honesty, his reliability and his generosity. But his legal team did admit that this was a significant stain on his otherwise impeccable character. They say Mr. Duffin has been emotionally distraught, personally devastated by what happened. But of course, the courtroom had also heard just how devastating it had been for the victim of the attack. Mm.
Well, he's an elected councillor, isn't he? But he's refusing to step down from the council.
He is. He has left the SDLP party, but he's kept his seat. He's now sitting as an independent. And he had previously said that he wasn't stepping down. And then, of course, today the sentence was handed down to him. He hasn't spoken publicly or given any interviews about this, but he couldn't avoid us outside Antrim Court today. So we'll play the tape. You'll hear a lot of gaps in this because Mr. Duffin doesn't say very much, but we will let you hear what he did say. This was a couple of hours ago outside Antrim Court.
Mr. Duffin, will you be resigning from the council?
No comment at the moment. I've appealed this. I'm doing an appeal. Okay.
So do you intend to stay on the council for now? Do you think it's appropriate for someone with your conviction now to be representing the people of Antrim and Newton Abbey? Do you have anything to say to the people you're supposed to be serving?
Well, I'll continue to serve them, faithfully as I have done.
Of course, your ability to serve them is now limited with the restrictions put on you to go to playgrounds or schools. Surely in light of that alone, you would consider your position. Mr. Duffin?
And with that, Brian Duffin walked off across the car park to consider his appeal. He'll be appealing his conviction and his sentence.
8:45. A new report into the TV and online viewing habits of preschool children has shown the majority of toddlers now have their own devices, tablets or whatever. The research, which involves speaking to over 1,000 parents, revealed the average amount of screen time kids are getting every day. And you may be surprised just what that limit is. Declan Harvey has been finding out more.
They used to say when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. These days, though, when the going gets tough, there's Peppa Pig.
Peppa Pig. This is my little brother George.
Forgive us if this sends a shudder down your spine, but for many parents, this 2D pig and his pig family can be a lifeline.
Peppa Pig. Good morning, everybody.
I've come to speak to Heidi.
How old are you, Heidi?
Three.
What is your favourite color?
What are you doing?
I am 35. What is your favourite thing to watch?
Peppa Pig.
And what else do you like watching?
Paw Patrol.
Do you know what the music for Paw Patrol is?
Paw Patrol. Paw Patrol will be there on the double
whenever there's a problem. If you don't have an under five in your life, this will mean nothing to you. But for those who do, this is familiar territory.
When you're watching Paw Patrol or Peppa Pig, what's the best bit?
Because I want to watch it forever.
The research charity Childwise suggests kids of preschool age, like Heidi, are spending these days an average of 3 hours a day watching television or online videos. It'll go some way to explaining why Disney's Let It Go from Frozen has been watched 2 billion times.
I don't care what they're going to say. They sure may die. They could never bother me anyway.
Heidi's been helping me look through the findings.
75% of people my age have access to a mobile device.
Not only do 3/4 have access to a device, 54% of 3- and 4-year-olds now own their own device. Heidi does.
Do you have an iPad?
Yes.
And does it make your eyes sore?
No.
There's also a difference between how much little boys and little girls watch.
Boys watch for longer than girls.
Thanks, Heidi.
See you, alligator.
Bye.
Concerns have been raised in some quarters about the effects of screen time on young kids, not least their sleeping patterns. Chloe is mum to 2-year-old Skyla.
At the evening times, like when I'm doing dinner or trying to get her settled for bed, I'd give her her tablet.
She has her own tablet?
Yeah, she has her own tablet.
What's the benefit in giving her own tablet?
It's like, gives me time to be able to sort dinner in peace, and she's not at my feet, and she's not getting hurt, and she's not burning herself.
Talk to me about the effect it has on her once you hand her the tablet.
She'll sit down and she'll be quiet and you wouldn't hear from her, really.
It's a game changer.
Yeah.
Do you ever limit how much she watches?
Not really, no.
Is this your...
This is my mum.
Your
yeah.
mum? Your granny?
Yes.
Hello, granny. What's your first
name? Lucinda.
Lucinda, you presumably raised Chloe without the help of screens and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
What's your view on it?
I don't mind them, you know. I teach just kids as well. Like.
There's an educational quality to it.
Yeah.
Do you ever think there's a time when the screen should go off?
Maybe about 10 minutes before bedtime, you know, that sort of way, and get them settled.
So another night of high drama at Westminster and a show of support to bolster Theresa May, but still no consensus between the UK and EU. Declan Harvey is on College Green for Good Morning Ulster this morning. Declan, what's happening at this early hour?
Well, it's a double gloves kind of morning in Westminster. Today the rush hour hum is just starting, and because there's so many people here over the past few weeks, the grass has slowly turned to mud. It's reminded me of an experience I had here several years ago when I was a young cub reporter, and a junior minister, Theresa May, was walking past, and I was trying to grab her and say, is there any chance I could have a word with you, Mrs. May? And she did very kindly on that day, traipse across this very mud to where I was standing over in the corner and risked the impact that she would have on her famous shoes. But little did she know then, and little did I know then, indeed, or any of us, what lay ahead for the future Prime Minister. You know, for weeks we have watched the indecision, the infighting, the heated debate over the future of Brexit and what the next moves should be to hopefully try and move the process on. And that is the light that we should be looking at last night's votes in. You know, as you said, there were those two amendments, the first by Caroline Spelman. It got the backing of MPs, which basically said that they don't want to see a no deal. But it was non-binding, which means Theresa May doesn't really have to do anything off the back of it, but it's a weather vane. It points to the mood within MPs' circles here. Tom Brake. Well, we understand that Theresa May is planning to hold the next vote on her Brexit plan on February 14th, Valentine's Day, of course. Seamus, the sheer mention of it warmed our hearts here earlier, and we got to thinking, what messages would voters be sending in their Valentine's cards to the Prime Minister this year?
Where do I begin to
could tell the story of how great a love can be.
Roses are red, violets are blue, the European Union is for you.
The simple truth about the love she brings to me.
Roses are red, violets are blue. I'm over Brexit and I'm over you too.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Brexit is...
I don't know, I've no clue.
She fills my heart with very special...
Roses are red, violets are blue. Get us out of Europe, Teresa, and I'll love you.
Roses are red, violets are blue, and Teresa May, I do not love you.
Roses are red, violets are blue. We voted to leave, now it's up to you.
And she'll be there.
You know, I never thought of you as Cupid, Declan.
It would warm the cockles of your heart on a cold January day, Seamus.
We often see your little brother in Piccadilly Circus.
Carry mighty funny gear.
And away, get away, you shanty man.
Ain't seen a halley up a minute a year.
And they got no use for a shanty man. Shanty man, oh shanty man.
The beauty of the view across Ballyhalbert Harbour on the Ards Peninsula has been punctured by the creaking, leaking and rotting remains of the Ocean Venture. The blue paint on the hull of this old fishing vessel has turned dark and oily, its bolts rusted as it sat here, battered by the weather for 2 years.
Absolute disgrace. It has to go. It is an eyesore and it's dangerous.
Diane Leach passes it every day. It makes her heart sink and her blood boil.
Oh, the harbour's used a lot. People fish off it, the children swim off it, and then we've got the jet skis and things come down in the summer. A lot of the locals also have wee small boats and stuff that we use, and it is an eyesore and dangerous.
But how did this coastal carbuncle end up here?
It just appeared one day. Somebody brought it in, and the story goes that it was sold to somebody who then realised how expensive it was for the fishing licence, and then they sold it to somebody who sold it to somebody. And then the last, apparently it was sold to somebody for £1, and it's been left derelict ever since.
Sing you a song and the world's gone wrong, when they got no use for a shanty man.
The current law allows fishermen to sell off their valuable fishing licences, but the process puts no onus on them to explain what happens to the boat it had been attached to. Compare that to an old clapped-out car. If you wanted to take it off the road, you'd need a SORN certificate. The authorities would want to know exactly what happened to the vehicle. There was something almost lonesome and sad about the Ocean Venture, rotting here as it has been for 2 years. But coincidentally, shortly after we arrived here in Ballyhalbert, the vessel decided, well, to give up the ghost. Water has suddenly started to gush over onto its decks. It is before our eyes being swallowed by the water. It's now half submerged, listing at 45 degrees. And now it looks a lot more dangerous. A much more urgent problem, perhaps. That problem is one for Ards and North Down Council. David Lindsay is their Director of Environment.
There's no legally binding regime to control or trace who the owner of that vessel is, and therefore the council, when faced with this abandoned vessel in its harbour, has found it virtually impossible to bring anyone to task. Well, obviously there's the immediate concern that it's a marine pollution risk, but secondly, the removal of that vessel and the proper disposal of it is going to cost a significant sum of money, perhaps up to £100,000. We don't have that money in the budget. A boat like this appears in one of our harbours and we're left to deal with it. We're going to have to cut some other service. We're going to have to find some way of saving money elsewhere to pay for this.
David says as the Northern Ireland fishing fleet ages, they expect up to 25 local vessels to be retired off in the next few years. The fishing licences, of course, will be sold on. But will the boats become the council's problem like the Ocean Venture has?
At the moment, there is no affordable solution for decommissioning of boats.
In response, the department, DIRA, agrees and says as it stands there are limited options, but a move to regulate the disposal of vessels would involve a ministerial decision. And of course,
There is no minister